Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle witch country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle podcast. Yeah, welcome to episode 52 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK network at paukradio.com. So I'm delighted to have my guest on this episode. It's the Reverend Alison Dunlop Shaines, who is author of the book Mystic Visions, which I believe has just been released as of, was it the 1st of April, Alison?
It was, yes, that's right.
So that's out there at the moment. It's on Flying Disc Press. I presume it's available through Amazon.
It is, yes.
I normally go to work where the books are available right at the end of the podcast, but I thought I'd get it out of the way to begin with. We've got a lot of stuff that I'd really like to talk about. You've got a fascinating bio, fascinating CV. Basically, you're a theologian and an exorcist. And I'd really like to talk about the work that you do with relation to exorcism and also your experiences with demons and also with angels and archangels as well. So can I ask, first of all, how did you become involved in, shall we say, the realm of exorcism?
I think it was a path that I was set on from quite an early age when my grandfather, who knew that I liked to watch Hammer horror films, handed me a book that he had found in a charity shop that he thought I would like. And I think he had no idea what lay beneath the covers, because that book was The Exorcist. And I was only 14 at the time. He would have been horrified had he known. Later on, that didn't really affect me, to be honest. And I never really thought too much of it, other than it was a work of fiction. But when I was in my late 20s, I had a demonic attack, a night demon, an incubus. And that set me off on a path of research, more than anything, and asking questions of anybody and everybody I knew. I told them about this experience and asked them if they had ever heard of anything similar, because I had never ever encountered anything like that. And then when I was in my 40s, the flat that I was living in, I was visited, a workman came in, and I got a really bad feeling from him, and I couldn't really put it into words what it was that I didn't like about him, but I had a bad feeling. And when he had left, when he had gone, there was still something. I didn't feel alone in the flat anymore.
Okay.
And that escalated over the next, I would say over the next month, from just simple noises to a full-blown spirit attack. Okay. By an invisible presence, an invisible force that I had to fend off. And after that, I decided I was going to do an exorcism in the flat.
Can I just ask you about, do you think it was something that this workman brought in with him then?
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely. He definitely had an attachment.
Right.
And I think that, or something similar to that. Hmm. And that when he came in, it was at least some of it, if not all of it, was left.
They're behind.
Hmm. Left behind. And for whatever reason, but you know, I wasn't going to have it staying with me. It wasn't welcome, and I let it know. By that point, I wasn't really so frightened of these things anymore. I was more like in charge. I had the Roman ritual, And I set about. I also had my background in paganism and magic, so I used elements of that, such as protective circles, you know, and consecrated salt, things that you actually would use in a Christian ritual in many cases, like holy water, sprinkled around. But I also used things like black salt at the doorways, and I put symbols on the doors and the walls, but I also invoked in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, in the name of Jesus, in the name of Mary, asking the saints to come in and help as well. And all these powerful forces had a very good effect in the end.
So it was a sort of combination of traditional pagan practices, obviously practices that go back many thousands of years, but also was there elements of would it be right in saying the Catholic Church that you were bringing into this?
Yeah, well, that the Roman ritual is the ritual that they use,
All right.
and I had that.
If you don't mind me asking.
Well, it begins with the Litany of the Saints, so you call in all the saints, and that is rather long in itself. I think at that point, I think that was all that I used from it. Because some of it is more appropriate to when you're dealing with a person. But the whole the entire to do the entire Roman ritual, which I have done, can take a full day, really, with a break in between, you know, if you become completely exhausted, you know. It can take a long time. The part that was what you might call, I suppose, pagan, used the four elements of earth, air, salt, earth, air, fire, and water. So there was consecrated, there was holy water, there was consecrated salt for earth, there was incense for fire. And air that represents air as well, but I also then used a candle for fire. So I used those elements and the black salt, which is just really ash or charcoal in salt, as extra protection outside the home. So these are things that neo I'd sort of come across through my time in the neo-pagan community, which I still consider myself a part of. I am not I'm in the old Catholic and Apostolic Church, and it's a liberal Catholic church. So there's not, as far as I'm concerned, the same restrictions between the between the religions and between the religious practices. There's not that sort of prejudice between them, you know. I used elements of both, and it worked extremely well. A night or a few nights later, after it, there was this sound of millions of hailstones, like hailstones on glass, that kind of sound battering off of glass. It was like statically charged energy on my ceiling. It wasn't just in my imagination, because my cats were transfixed by this noise that went on for some time. And it was only after that I read in a book called Begone Satan by Carl Vogel, that this This is significant. It signifies the end of the exorcism. It means that the energies have gone, they've lifted. And the flat was a completely different place after that. It was completely different. It felt cleansed, you know, it felt clean of anything negative.
Sort of thing, like,
Yeah, and my mother commented on it, in fact, when she came in. I think it was a couple of days after that or the next day that she commented. She thought, "What have you done in here? Like, because it just feels so light and different, you know." So she actually noticed that there was something different, and I never told her. I think I might have told her later, but not that day. I didn't. So it was very evident that something had been done and that something had worked.
Do you know what the entity was? Did you get any indication at all of what it was and why it had attached itself to you from this workman?
No, I didn't tune in to it at all. I did address it at one point and said, "You can't attach yourself to me. This is my home and you're not welcome in it. So get out." And that was a couple of weeks went by and there was nothing. And then there was scratchings on the wall. You sense scratching on the wall, shelves, things like that, but were shaking, bed shaking. You know, I'd wake up with these things happening. And then, as I say, the attack by the invisible presence, this invisible force. And as I say, all these things were mentioned in Begone Satan, which I only read afterwards, you know, because I was researching for a talk that I was doing. Everything that happened to me happened to the priest in that book.
That's quite bizarre then, isn't it, really? It's...
Very bizarre.
So this habit then that these dark entities, these demons, if we can call them demons, have of attaching themselves to people and sort of perhaps jumping from one person to another. Have you come across this on other occasions, or what sort of other experiences have you had with demons?
I can't say that I've experienced this sort of jumping from one to another, although I do know somebody who went on an investigation. This is something obviously investigators have to be really careful about, is they're going to places because they're haunted and they've got no idea what they are actually going into, and they tend not to do any kind of protection ritual beforehand, and they just go in wide open. And this was the case. And the man, when he came home, it actually started affecting his baby son, and that really was obviously bad news for him. But he also felt the attachment on him, and he told myself and my husband. My husband's a psychic medium, and he very quickly, I mean, I've he can do some things very, very quickly, and he just spent a few moments with this guy, placed, you know, his hand on his shoulder. And the guy actually felt the attachment leave him.
All right, okay.
So, as I say, investigators need to be careful. They think that they're immune to things when they walk into properties, but they are really not. They have to be careful of that kind of environment. But yeah, I'm dealing with a case just now that don't really know if there's more than one spirit involved. I get a feeling now that there is. that this spirit may, as I say, not have jumped like from one person to another, but I think it's probably they are partly they are attachments, and I think that then has weakened the person, and because of her work, and this is another danger, when you're doing psychic, any kind of psychic mediumship, healing as well, and she was a Reiki practitioner, and had a very sort of beautiful existence up until maybe about 6 years ago. She worked with angels, she loved healing people. But then at one point she must have been vulnerable. I see, that's the thing. Like, if you're doing something like that again, you need to make sure that you are pr protecting your aura, you know. And if it's weak at all, then you can pick up like energies from the person that you're working with. But you can also, by being open and doing work like that, you can unintentionally invite something extremely bad into you, and first of all attached to you, and that is what happened. And I also think that you have like a hierarchy of demons,
Okay.
and a higher up demon, a stronger demon, can send out lesser demons to do its dirty work. There can be a chain of command. This chain of command can be quite long, and go from, in one case that I know of, it went from the girl through to, this is a different case, it went from the girl through to her boyfriend, who was in a psychiatric unit. And from him, he was actually been he had sort of did sort of black magic stuff, but he was being influenced by a lesser demon that he had been involved with, who was being commanded by one of the big guys. So it's not all like simple black and white, you're dealing with a demon and that's it. It's not, and you can do an exorcism, but a few day and it can work, and then a day or two later you've got the problem again, because there's something else, there's something that you've missed. And that happens quite often, not just to somebody who's maybe less experienced. This happens to Catholic priests as well, who are experienced. Like Gabriele Amort, Father Amort, who's the Pope's exorcist, now deceased. I know that he dealt with cases where he had to do repeat exorcisms, because I think, now I can't remember the exact number, but I think it's down as something like 8,000 exorcisms that he did in his lifetime. That's not necessarily full-blown exorcisms, that can be shorter prayers and things like that, but that also is not just the amount of people, because those can be repeat exorcisms. It's quite common to have to, some of these entities, there can be more than one, and it can take a long time to get rid of even one.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
where do they come from? Where do they reside? I mean, are we talking about, and let's get straight to the point here. Are we talking about the Bible? Are we talking about heaven and hell? Is that the sort of thing we're talking about? Is that the sort of realm where these demons, and obviously when we chat later on about angels, where they come from?
You can be talking about that, but you can be talking about things that have been sent to you like by somebody who doesn't like you, like a thought form that somebody has created, or a demon that somebody has summoned and sent to you. So that can be something that happens. I mean, there's all different thoughts about where they come from, and I guess the easiest label it sort of encompasses, it's like an all-encompassing word, is to say they come from hell, because that, I suppose.
So it's very Hollywoodized, isn't it? That it's very, people probably think of sort of films like The Exorcist or like Constantine, for instance, where it's very graphic that they come from hell and there's heaven and hell and all, it's all around the mysticism of the Bible and everything else.
Sometimes it can just be energy that's been put out there into the atmosphere.
Sort of just like negative energy.
Yeah, I mean, there's like maybe magical practitioners who have left rituals unfinished. Now, Aleister Crowley was said to have done that at Borley. No, not Borley. what's the place that he stayed? I can't remember now. But he was said to have done a ritual that took months to do, but that he left halfway through, and that this negative demon was left to kind of do its own thing.
Right.
So that if that happened, I'm not saying that he did do that, but it has been known to happen by others. That's, another a sort of thing, but usually it would be something that would be summoned by or invited in, because sometimes demons are attracted to like is like, they're attracted to something in us that's similar to their personality that they have.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So if somebody's got that propensity to be dark in themselves, their personality, then they can attract a similar type of personality from this negative energy that we are describing as demons.
And or it could be that, I mean, I know that we're talking about demons, but it's still, there's things like curses, for example, that it can even be generational curses, where this sort of negative energy or demon is with a family for many years.
So we're going back to the sort of old days of, I suppose, witchcraft in a way, where practicing witches would put curses on people and unfortunate things would befall them because of that and so on. So the Pendle witches, for instance, which is obviously quite close to my heart, that they were accused of putting spells on people that eventually either killed them or killed killed the farm animals or whatever. So it's obviously channeling that sort of negative energy, isn't it?
I
So
mean, it, not every, I have to say that not every witch will be doing stuff like that. I don't actually think it's that common, really, for a witch to do something like that, but it does happen. It does happen.
I mean, using the word witches, we're opening a whole can of worms, aren't we? Using the word witch, because it can has so many different connotations. So, it can be attributed to people who just believe in the old pagan religions, you know,
Yeah.
which is not the right thing to do. You shouldn't be attaching that to them. Can I ask you about you had an experience, didn't you, with was it described, did you describe it as a sort of UFO or a sort of ball of plasma or something like that?
Yeah, so that was to do with the incubus attack that I had when I was in my late 20s. I know that seems like surprising, but it started off with a dream about a vampire. Now, vampirism can be, people think vampires don't exist, but in the astral world, if you want to put it like that, in that psychic world, they definitely do exist, and they definitely can suck your energy, you know, they're after your energy.
Right.
That's what I was dreaming about. I woke up quite frightened. The room was this very strange shade of blue. And then I was trying to waken up my partner, which I couldn't. I couldn't waken him, which is another feature of the incubus experience, is that the person beside you can't waken them. The next thing, I was flipped onto my back and pinned down by this unholy creature, and he said, "You thought you could get away from me, didn't you?" And he started scraping at my neck with this very long fingernail, trying to cut my throat. And there was an old woman standing by the window just in the corner, who was, you know, dressed in a long white nightdress and long hair, and she was laughing into her hand. This is, I later found out, the Mara, where we get the word nightmare from.
Okay.
So it's sometimes known as old hag syndrome,
Yeah, heard about that. Yeah.
for that reason, because she can feature. There are other features to these attacks. So you can have the young sort of male figure, the young female figure, the old female figure, the imp figure. And I at some point, I think I must have passed out, woke up, and everything was fine. There was an almost repeat incident about a week later, where I woke up and I was paralyzed, and the room was this strange shade of blue again. But I managed to get my partner's attention. He was through the room, and I managed to scream out, and he came in and put on the light, and that sort of stopped the experience. And there wasn't another one after that.
Because
Now,
incubus are usually, and I don't want to go into too much detail because obviously it's very personal, but they can be sexually motivated, can't they? Now, obviously, I don't want to go into any of that.
No, that's okay. It wasn't sexually motivated. I'm aware of that, and I know that that is quite common for people to experience. They can be they can have sexual intentions or murderous intentions, and this one definitely had murderous intentions.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. But go forward like 14 years, and I met someone at the Stirling Paranormal Festival, and he was telling me about these UFOs that he had seen over Glasgow in the run-up to the millennium.
Right.
And he had done this Photoshop of where he had seen this UFO, and he said it was like a blue plasma light that just imploded. And when he showed me the picture, it was above my flat
All right.
in Tory Glen in Glasgow. And I can't give you the date of my attack, but it was the same month. He saw this in the same month as my attack. And I can't say for sure that there was a connection, but it seems, I believe that there was a connection there. Now, I don't know what that was. I don't think it was a physical UFO,
Right.
but
Some sort of portal, do you think, or?
it could have been, but certainly it seemed to have been utilized in some way for something to come through.
And you think this could possibly have been this incubus spirit that came through and had the experience with you?
I think so. I think so. I had no idea. I was just thinking, and I still do actually think demonic. I don't think that there's an like an alien connection there, and I don't think that it was a physical UFO,
Right.
like a military aircraft type thing. I don't think it was anything like that. And I've seen more recently people looking at the possibility that some UFOs have a demonic sort of connection.
Yeah, I have spoken to people who've had that hypothesis. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. John Keel was one, the Mothman Prophecies guy. He was somebody that believed that some UFOs certainly had a connection to the demonic.
So when you have these personal experiences, are you frightened at all? Does it invoke any sort of fear in you? Because you seem quite calm, explaining what happened, and it's quite you seem quite sort of strong in the way that you're describing how you dealt with them. So do you ever get that feeling of fear?
In the moment, you can do. Certainly, with the incubus attack, I was very frightened. And with the experience that I had of the Pleiadians, who appeared to me, and I had paralysis as well in that experience. I had like lots of different emotions going, there was fear because I was paralyzed, and I was seeing something that was completely out of the ordinary.
So I
The
want to ask you about that and
okay.
what these beings were that you saw and how you saw them. How this happened.
Okay. I mean, it's difficult to say what they were, but certainly the vibe that they gave was it was they weren't of this world. They were extraterrestrial, so whether that was that they were divine beings, but because there definitely seemed to be that vibe, so whether they were angelic or whether these Palladians that people have reported have that, angelic connection, I couldn't tell you. But I woke up and I had this beam of light going to my forehead. There was a circle in the ceiling overhead that was like a platform, and there was a man looking over. He had dark hair, and I felt like my the top half of my body, my head and my shoulders being lifted up off the pillow. And as soon as he saw that I saw him, he said to someone close by that I couldn't see, "We've got her." And then other sort of humanoid beings looked over, and one of them leaned down and said, "You have to tell people about us." And I mean, it wasn't just sort of fear, it was also elation too. I was in awe of what I was seeing. And I said, "I will, I'll tell people." And he said, "No, you must promise." He was really pleading, "You must promise that you'll tell people about us." And I said, "I promise I will." And
Did this humanoid figure say why it was so insistent on you telling Pete no?
no, he didn't. I just had to do it. That was my task, you know. It's like that's your task. We're giving you this task. It's an important task. Clearly, it was an important task. It could be that if it was angelic, then people are kind of forgetting about the angels. They're maybe getting forgotten about, and they maybe think that it's important that we remember that they are out there and that we can call upon them for help. And I think that that might be, I'm only surmising, but I think that that could be a reason why. I later saw in paintings, because I, you know, wanted to see if anybody else had seen similar. So one of the first things that I came across was a painting or a drawing of what somebody had called the Palladians, who are extraterrestrials supposedly from the constellation the Pleiades. I don't know where people get this information from. I'm presuming that perhaps they're told this, but that's what they looked like anyway. They were dark haired. They weren't like the blonde haired Nordics. They were dark haired, and
So
I
are these, sorry, are these then what you would describe as angels?
think they could be. I mean, they were dressed. They weren't like, you know, dressed like white dresses and wings. There was nothing like that. They're actually quite Star Trekky, you know, the sort of space suits, that kind of thing. But they weren't, although they were physical in some way, there was something that there was other about them. I was seeing them in another dimension. And I think that that's why this was being beamed to my forehead. It was a telepathic communication. Now, I also saw in some artwork similar things, particularly paintings of the Annunciation, where Mary is given news that she is going to have the child of God, and this beam of light going to her forehead. And sometimes it's Gabriel who's giving the message, or it's maybe represented symbolically with a dove that symbolizes peace, or, you know, just the message.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you look at a lot of very old paintings, in particular, a lot of old religious paintings, so sort of pre, and I'm not an art expert at all, but sort of medieval or pre-medieval, where you've got very strong religious iconography within these paintings. Sometimes, if you look at the detail, there is some really interesting bits in there that you think, well, hang on a minute, how's that come about? How've they painted? Because that looks like a space helmet, or that looks like a sort of space vehicle of some description, it right in the background in the sky, or somewhere like that. I'm really interested, actually, how you sort of how this makes you feel as a religious person. So you've got, on one side, you've got demons and all this negative energy. On the other side, you've got you've briefly got into angels and sort of what angels, I mean, we think of angels, as you said, with wings and sort of long flowing robes and everything else. And I'm sure that some people have seen them in that way. Maybe it's how people sort of interpret them themselves. Maybe they look different to different people. I'm just curious as to how it makes you feel as a religious person, knowing that all this is going on.
Well, first of all, I have experienced an angel in the sense of
Classic sense.
the bright white light and the sort of wings. But the wings were more in the form of light.
Right.
And I'd been having a dream, and it was a priest who was saying the Lord's Prayer and was coming towards me. And as he was going through the Lord's Prayer, his face began to change. He began to become evil. His voice began to become evil. Like he'd gone from being coming from going from being good to being bad, or being possessed. And as he got right close to me, and I woke up with a start, and right in front of me was an angel with, the outspread wings, and it was just bright light. It was so bright that I couldn't even really see their face. And I say she because I got the feeling that it was a she. And she just sort of glided back into the corner of the room and disappeared.
Right.
So that was another experience that I had that was of more of the sort of typical angelic type. I mean,
Would you say that then reinforced your faith?
well, it was really strange because at the time I didn't have this faith,
Right, okay.
and the faith that I have now was a long way away. I didn't really have any sort of belief, not even my pagan path that I hadn't even come across yet. So it was very curious to me why on earth I should have a vision that was religious. I couldn't understand this at all. So it was many years later, just sort of looking back, and what I think now is that I was, because at that time I was getting other visions, or sensing other things, like precognitive things. And I think that this may have been a precognition of what was going on in the priesthood, like with the abuse cases in the priesthood.
Okay.
Now, I wasn't brought up in the Catholic faith. I was brought up in the Church of Scotland. It wasn't ever forced on me. Religion wasn't shoved down my throat or anything. If I wanted to go to church, I could go to church. And I would sometimes accompany my mum to church, but or go with the school, Easter and Christmas. But so that's why I'm saying, it was really strange to me that I should have what appeared to be a religious vision.
Because you mentioned about your precognitive visions. I mean, I understand from looking at your bio that you've had some quite historically important, shall we say, visions with regards to 9/11 and the Paris attacks as well, 2015. I mean, how did they come about? What was that like? And how did you feel when the actual events took place?
I initially got a feeling that something was going to happen in New York and Paris. And it was round about the same time as that vision of the priest.
Right.
I didn't know what on earth it could be, but I knew that I didn't want to visit these places until after it happened. I told a friend, and she was saying, what do you mean? And I said, I don't know what I mean, and I don't know where it's coming from. I just this is just how I feel. Moving to 2002, was it 2002, 2001?
There's the one.
2001, yeah. 3 months before 9/11, I started daydreaming about planes coming. I lived in a high-rise flat. I started daydreaming about planes coming through my window. So I would find myself just thinking about it and then thinking, why on earth am I thinking these thoughts? You know, thinking I wouldn't stand a chance if a plane came through my window. Or I'd be looking over the city at other high rises and seeing planes going into them and thinking, oh, they wouldn't stand a chance. And then, of course, the day of 9/11 happened, and the whole world just, I think, froze in terror and in horror at what they were witnessing. And, you know, I was no different. But on top of that, I realized what I was looking at was what I'd been thinking about. And that it must have been not just my bizarre thoughts or daydreams, but it must actually have been a vision of a precognitive vision of what was about to happen.
Like a premonition of
Yeah. Yeah, so I was quite horrified, not just at what I was seeing, but about the fact that I'd had this. I hadn't even realised it was precognitive. But in any case, what would I have done? What could I have done? Nothing, nothing. And the same with the Paris attack. After the 9/11, in between times, I had been to development circles. So when I was sitting and I saw this bullet-shaped bomb coming through my window, I began to tune in to see if I could get more because I thought, oh, here we go. This must be one of these visions that I've had before and just mistook for a crazy thought, you know. And I could see this city that had a domed building in it. I mistook it for Rome,
right.
when in actual fact, right across from me were two pictures of Paris. One was the Eiffel Tower and one was the Sacré-Cœur, which is domed. So as I say, I started putting my own thoughts into it. Could it be this? Could it be that? You know, and just rather than let the information come to me. So that was, I think, a mistake that I made there. But it was the next day that the Paris attack happened, and I realised what it was that I'd seen. But it can be after the event that you realise what you've actually been witnessing.
And of course, if you went to the authorities and said, "I've just had a premonition that, a plane's going to fly into the Eiffel Tower, for instance, or, there's going to be a mass shooting in Berlin or something like that," you'd just be written off as being a bit crackpot, wouldn't you?
Of course you would. You can't blame them. I mean, they must get calls like that every day. And the thing is that some people are, in need of help. They are obsessed by their every thought and their every thought, and I've met people like this. Their every thought, they write down, they record, and they try to fit it to, they'll think about bad thoughts, they'll ruminate over bad things happening, like car crashes and plane crashes and earthquakes and this and that and the other. And of course, at some point
They have.
within like the next week, something like that in the world is going to happen. But they, you know, they scour the newspapers to find if something like that has happened, and then they fit it to that thought that they've had, and they are just completely obsessed. It's not just like the occasional vision that is turns out to be right,
Yeah.
and Anne Treherne, she had the same with Dunblane. That was a kind of a sort of a one-off vision about something that was major,
Yeah.
and she's the lady that lives in Edinburgh or near Edinburgh, and she's brought out a book as well. I think it's called Arthur and Me or Arthur and I can't quite remember, but that's an interesting tale too. It's quite similar to my own actually. So you have to sort of wonder, like, is it the police on the other end of the phone are thinking, oh, here's this person again telling us about, or here's someone else,
Yeah.
who's completely obsessed by their every thought, when you're not. You might be somebody who genuinely has had a vision, but the
You're not getting them all the time. You're not trying to fit what you're thinking into things that have happened.
yeah.
Yeah, you're just getting them every now and then, and unfortunately, they're coming true. Yeah, I mean that's you have to wonder whether, I mean, there's historically when you look at people like the very famous ones, Nostradamus, for instance, or Mother Shipton, in over in Knaresbury in Yorkshire. I mean, there were some of the visions that they had. Again, you can sort of mould them, can't you, a little bit into to be able to fit into things. But I suppose with the very specific things that you're seeing, it's a little bit more. A little bit more worrying in a way, that you're seeing things more specific.
Yeah, it's a little bit like, the nail on the head. You've hit the nail on the head.
More convincing. That's what I was. That's what I was trying to come out. More convincing.
It's, yeah, as you say, it's a bit more worrying because it's quite specific.
Yeah, I suppose you don't want any more of these types of foreboding, because obviously it means that something bad's going to happen. You'd rather you didn't
Yeah,
have.
I actually knew that something was coming before COVID happened.
Okay, all right.
There's things that afterwards I've thought, oh, I didn't put that in the book. I forgot to put that in the book. And that was one of them. I got a feeling that something bad was coming. And I didn't know what it was, but I started keeping a box of food, like tinned foods and dry foods and buying toilet paper in bulk. You remember that?
Oh, so it was you that started it then, was it?
Well, I didn't have like a whole cupboard full of toilet roll or anything. I wasn't selling it for 20 quid on eBay. But remember, like, the first couple of weeks of the lockdown, the shelves were empty of toilet rolls, and
I do remember.
I said to my mum, I was like, you thought I was crazy. You thought I was crazy for having extra things in the cupboard just in case, because she was like, why have you got like a box of all these things or bottles of water and stuff like that? And I said, well, it's just in case something happens.
It must have been a strong drive then that you had. It must have been quite a powerful feeling that you had that something bad was coming.
Yeah, I would kid her on. I'd say zombie apocalypse,
Wasn't it near enough?
and it was. I mean, it was kind of, yeah.
Feel that way sometimes. So yeah, that's both interesting and scary in equal measures, I think. It must quite disturbing for you as a person to have these sort of things. Let's just quickly move on to something that's a little bit less serious, although I'm sure that it is a serious event when it's done. You host the Scottish UFO and Paranormal Conference. When does that happen? Is that an annual thing? What sort of people do you have as guests or
It is an annual event, yes. This year it's on Saturday, the 15th of June, in the where it usually is, the Queen Margaret Union University Gardens in Glasgow. It's within like the grounds of Glasgow, the University of Glasgow. And that's 10 a.m. till 7 p.m. And I'll just tell you who's going to be speaking. I'll just get my glasses on.
Yeah, no problem.
So
Not easy when you've got headphones
I
on.
know, I know. So the first person speaking is Karen Strang, and she is a visual artist, predominantly a painter. And she's going to be talking about the kind of artwork that she does that includes things like the quite often it's to do with witchcraft, actually, that she has, or the pagan landscape and things like that. So I don't know exactly what she's going to be, saying, but she's got the title is The Cunning Har, The Magic of Painting. So it'll be something, along those sort of lines. I'll be speaking next on psychic attack and self-defense. And Gordon Rutter, he's going to be speaking about frightening flora. Just read out his little blurb because it's really good. Tales of plants, but not the nice, medicinal, and pretty ones. No, it's the turn of the nasty ones to get their chance in the spotlight. Examples will be taken from folklore and fiction with some frightening factual flowers for good luck. Have an ex you hate? Listen along and find a suitable bouquet for them. NB, NB, the same bouquet will probably do for people you like if their interest lies more in the macabre.
That sounds fascinating. That sounds brilliant. That's
Oh, that is great.
so yeah, so we've got plenty of Deadly Nightshade and
He's quite the personality, Gordon Rutter, and he also MCs our events as well. And then after lunch, Ron Halliday will be talking. I don't know if you've spoken to Ron before. He lives in Scotland. He's a writer. He's got some great books out there. On I think the first one that he did was called McKex Files or something. And he also had a what do you call it? A column in one of the newspapers.
All right, okay. I'll search him out, see if I can contact him.
Yeah, so he's done books on the paranormal and ufology before, and he's going to be talking about ancient aliens and examining evidence that our Earth was visited by ancient aliens in the distant past. Where they, for example, the pyramids, where the pyramids of ancient Egypt constructed by these beings. Could we be the descendants of these ancient colonists, or are aliens masquerading as human beings taking over the earth? All this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the Erich von Däniken
So he's going to be sort of talking about that. It's something that I don't think we've had. We try to vary our talks. We try to have them like all different every year.
is it a ticket thing, or can people just sort of turn up on the day?
It is ticketed. Our tickets are on Eventbrite.
Okay.
People can buy them there. It helps us if they do buy them there because then we have a reasonable idea of how many people to expect. But you can, like, if you don't know what you're going to be doing, you can get them on the door, and there will be space. It's quite a big space, so there will be plenty of room. The next speaker is Linda Whiteford, and her talk is on the ghosts of Kuros.
Okay.
The Kuros is a lovely little place. It's where Outlander was filmed there, and there's a witch connection there too. People were executed as witches there, and she now works at Kuros Palace, where she communicates with the spirits who reside there, and she's going to be telling us about that. Malcolm Robinson,
Hi.
the infamous, he's going to be talking about UFOs in Scotland. So he'll discuss things like the A70 incident and the Craigleusker Reservoir and Polmont Reservoir cases. He'll be talking about all that.
Yeah, he's somebody on my list interview at some point if I can pin him down, get all the
Oh yeah, he'll be more than happy to come on your show. And the last one, I'm really looking forward to listening to this guy, Alan Murdy.
okay.
He's talking about the mystery of the White Lady ghosts. So many reports of hauntings involve a ghost who is traditionally female, but alongside these are this particular and recurrent type of apparition, a class known internationally as the White Lady. And these white ladies appear as anonymous apparitions. They appear in a fixed and emblematic form. And typically, she's a phantom of a woman who appears in white or pale clothing, who seems to manifest in rural rather than urban and domestic settings. And quite often, these are frequently seen standing beside or on or even crossing a road or materializing at remote and isolated spots. So what I'm interested in is whether he's going to talk about Our Lady, you know, like Our Lady of Fatima or Our Lady of Lourdes. Because I think that I would think that those would come under
Yeah,
that White Lady apparitions.
that's actually really interesting because locally to me we have Salmesbury Hall, which is near Preston, and that is famous for having a white lady, Dorothy de Southworth, who is often seen floating across the road.
Right.
There's a main air road right outside the hall. The hall dates back to about the 1100s, and she's often seen in the grounds and, as I say, floating across the road. And there's been numerous occasions where cars have screeched to a halt because the drivers think that they've actually run somebody over. You know, they get out the car and they're absolutely adamant that they've run over a young woman. And of course, it's the ghost of Dorothy. So yeah, that's very similar actually to what your guest is talking about, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, that sounds really good. That's an annual event. So, and you have a radio show, I believe.
I do ADX files, which people can find on Mixcloud, and that's kind of like this podcast, you know, talking about the strange, the paranormal, a bit of ufology, a bit of everything really, you know, anything bizarre and weird and wonderful. I tend to stay away from the sort of conspiracy world. I try to stay away from that. And I also obviously have a leaning towards the spiritual side of things. I did do, I think there was about five short radio podcasts on various supernatural things that supernatural religion
Right.
covered that, called Candle in the Dark. I've not had a lot of time recently because something has to go, you know, when I start to write my talks for the annual event, and I've had to put my shows on hold right now so as I can concentrate on the talk that I'm going to be giving on psychic attack and self-defense, which is a lot of what I've been talking about to yourself today. And
Yeah,
I
something has to give, doesn't it? You
yeah.
can't do everything. I know how time consuming it can be, because I've written books and I obviously do this as well. So yeah, it can sort of take over a little bit, can't it? So you have to let some things rest for a while whilst you concentrate on other things.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you. It's a subject that I've wanted to discuss with somebody for a while, especially as I said right at the beginning. Certainly the subject of demons is something that I found really interesting, and so you've just really, you've piqued my interest even more now to go out and find out more information about what this phenomena is, to be honest. And as I say, it's been great to talk to you. Good luck with the book. The book's on Amazon, is it? Did you say?
It's available on Amazon, or if you come along to the conference, I can do you a signed copy and give you a little discount as well at the same time. So,
It's on Flying Disc Press, isn't it? Which is Philip
it is.
Antle's label. Well, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much. Good luck with the book. Good luck with the
Thank you.
conference. Yeah, make sure you get back into podcasting at some point.
Oh, definitely. That's just it's just resting at the moment. It's just having a rest while I get on with other things.
And just one last thing, if people want to get in contact with you, is where's the best place to get in contact with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook,
Okay.
but they can also email, which is probably best, is spiscotland@gmail.com.
Okay.
So that's probably the best place to get me.
I'll put your email in the description, and then people can drop you an email if they want to have a chat with you.
Okay.
Brilliant. Thank you. Best of luck going
Thank you.
forward, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
Hope to speak to you again soon as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye bye. You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.